escalate. Aloha, Mud Babies, Pod People, and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your Tiki Leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew. Gonna have a good show for you today. That's right, gonna be a good show for you today. I'm gonna have on Andy Jewett. Andy is a comic, a producer, a writer, a local celebrity here in Denver. I know he won't think that he is, but he is. Everybody in the industry knows Andy Jewett. He is producing some of the best comedy shows around Denver and is a really nice guy. So without any more of this hesitation and chatter up front, let's get right to the podcast. Here we go. It's Andy Jewett. Andy!
Yeah, what else do you want to talk about? Just like
we can talk about
how we know each other. And
yeah, we can talk about anything, everything, topics, anything that's in the news. And so we're actually gonna. I hit the button. We're rolling right now. So
terrific.
This is the way it's best to do. Hey, we're sitting here in the Remasculate Studio
basement.
Yeah.
We call it a studio, you know, because it's got equipment. But I'm sitting here with Andy Jewett, the co-founder and producer of the High Plains Comedy Festival.
Hi, Steve. How you doing?
I am well. I feel like I'm talking to somebody high up in the business world when I say co-founder and producer.
Well, that's my deal, Steve. My brand is business. I want everyone to think that I only do business, that I'm never funny or appreciate anything I do outside of raw numbers. That's my deal.
You're a numbers man?
No, absolutely not.
But you don't roll a number? You don't?
Well, you know.
You know.
Yeah, I do it with Adam Catenholland and Pete Turner of Illegal Pete's, and it's coming up this week, August 21st through the 23rd, Thursday to Saturday in Denver, Colorado.
And a lot of places, right? I mean, that's a lot of places.
Yeah. Thursday and Friday will be down on South Broadway, and all the shows are at Three Kings, High Dive, Mutiny Information Cafe is a new venue that we've added a little more throughout the fest. And then True Brewing, there's a podcast with Taylor Gonda and Kevin O'Brien that you should go see on Saturday.
They do one of the live podcasts?
Yeah. It's something called These Things Matter, and Andy Haynes and Matt Ingebrigtsen and Ian Carmel will be that. That's actually Saturday at 2 o'clock at True Brewing, which is a death metal brewery.
Is it really?
Yeah, and it sponsors Adam's podcast.
Oh, I have, because Adam, I've listened to his podcast, but from the kitchen table or something.
My dining room table.
My dining room table.
Yes,
and
yes.
I heard one day that he was getting a heavy metal bar sponsor his podcast.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm jealous. How do you do that?
Go talk to him, man. Their beer is really good. It's honestly, it's very good beer.
What is a heavy metal beer? High alcohol?
It's just, I don't know. I think the brewers would have to answer that. It probably embodies the spirit of black metal brewing. I don't know what that could be. Maybe just like, just wearing no shirt and a leather vest while you're making the beer. Something along those lines.
Use sweaty guitar picks thrown into the vat to add flavor to
Yeah. The- yeah, wear some of those weird goat horns and then just like, I don't know, these are terrible and they'll hate everything that I'm using as an example here. I don't know, guys.
Well,
I'm doing the best I can. I love the brewery. I'm not as black metal as 70% of my friends that go there.
Well, you tried. That's what the few times
I hang out, I try. I love it. I love the art. I love the beer. Everyone there is super nice.
You know what's funny is you talk about, I've done this here, is you talk about products and they love you for a while. Like I was Perky Jerky. I've got boxes over here.
Energy jerky.
Yeah. They were sponsoring for a while. And then I think I said something on the podcast that they thought, we should distance ourselves.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And then Pop Chips came on board for a while. I had Pop
Chips. Yep.
And they were sending me Pop Chips and talking about it. And then one day I think they said, you know, you're not the right image that we want. Katy Perry is more Pop Chip.
Yeah, it's tricky because people are touchy about their brands. So
yeah.
People that swear and are a little outside the always PG box, I think sometimes brands are afraid of. But it's funny because when I was working at ESPN, Colin Cowherd, who is at the ESPN radio personality, he's the guy who's like middays, like after Mike and Mike in the Morning. He's right. Their big franchise around the country. He had the Perky Jerky here, and they pitched him, and he bought part of the company.
Oh, really?
And that's why he does it. When you hear on the radio now, he's the pitch man for it, because he bought into it, and he's like, you know. I'm in Denver, my number one energy jerky is Perky Jerky. Colin Cowherd, ESPN.
I used to love coming home. I would just like pull into my driveway, and there'd be like some boxes, like four or five crates sitting on my porch.
Let's not give them any more advertising unless you get Steve some more boxes of Perky Jerky.
Do you hear
guys.
What I'm saying?
At least have a monthly drop off of a more than offensive amount of product.
Yeah, your amount should be offensive to match my offensive.
Right.
And I think I agree with you about products. I mean, so right. Do you know any other podcasts or things around town that have attempted sponsorship and then they find out, like, no, we can't do this with you?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know about brand where they were like, where they backed off because the material wasn't there. Like, most of them, I feel like, know what they go into it, but maybe drop off for other reasons or something.
Yeah, financial reasons or
whatever. Yeah, with, you know, good intentions, hopefully. But I don't I don't know about material. Maybe some of the old T-Radio V ones. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Trevor's had that. I don't know.
I'm sure. Well, he always goes for, like, bars and tattoo places.
And, yeah, and Trevor's audience knows houses. Him and all that stuff, too. Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe... You know, so I don't. I'm trying to think of anyone locally who's ever had someone drop out because of the material. I don't know.
So let's find out more about you. What got you to Denver? And you, as I know, and a lot of people that do know you, you really just sort of came onto the scene, did through the radio, and then went boom. Andy is comedy. So tell.
Yeah, everyone's saying that.
I mean, it does.
Andy is comedy. I lived in Colorado Springs for 7 years before I moved to Denver. I helped run some radio stations down there for Clear Channel. That was always sort of, my day job. I got married young and had kids young. I was married for 10 years, and it was a great job, and I loved it. And I came from Michigan. I grew up in Michigan. I came to Colorado 14 years ago. So the balance, I've been in Denver, but I really felt like Denver was a platform to do more of what I was doing in Colorado Springs, but on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
Like, I was writing for Punchline Magazine, which I was the editor, or the humor columnist, you know, just writing stuff and goofy stuff, mostly not really performing a whole lot down there, but, you know, starting to make some weird online content and
you had
things
a presence.
Like that. Yeah. A little bit of a presence. And my friend Alan and I had a really weird, can't even believe we made it 2+ years on the radio, because it was on My 99.9, which is KVU down there. KVUU.
Yeah.
We were a nighttime show where I was a pukey DJ named Ned the Night Owl.
Can they have a little bit of that?
Yeah. yeah, for sure. I'm trying to think what we used to say. It would be like you'd come out of like something that's so not what this person would sound like, because all we would talk about was like thinly veiled sexual references and like partying and stuff. We invited people to our house, and then we'd be like, we'd come out of like, you know, something really light and shitty and weird, like Pink or whatever. And it would be so it'd be very soft AC, and then it'd be like, hey, this is Ned the Night Owl. I'm here with Colby Gaper. We're the 50,000-watt blowtorch blowing across, you know, Gunnison and the Pikes Peak Range. Like, just nonsense. That wasn't very good. Sorry.
The real puking.
I can't really remember what, yeah.
But you were puking. Like, what?
Yeah, I mean, that was, like, in the radio station, we would have our promotions meetings with all the PDs and the sales managers.
Yeah.
And the program director. I would make fun of all the DJs for being all pukey in their endorsements and whatever. And so I would do all the promotions meetings in that voice. And then he was like, well, you should do this as our Friday night show. And so after work on Thursdays, me and my friend Alan would sometimes go get messed up and then record that show for Friday. And then we'd be out partying, listening to ourselves invite people in Colorado Springs to our house to parties.
Oh, like a listening party.
Yeah.
Let's listen to ourselves.
Yeah, we'd tell them where our house was. We were both recently divorced. This is the year I got divorced. And
because of some of this, maybe?
No. It was because, you know, we got married young. I got... in my act, I talk about this, but I got my freshman girlfriend pregnant my last day of my freshman year at Boston College.
Oh.
And so that's a real thing. So
that'll put you on a path.
Yeah, yeah. So for 10 years, I mean, so for all that time in the Springs, you know, I was really raising a family and whatever, and doing not nearly what I would consider, you know, anything in a comedy scene.
Right.
But doing comedy stuff and sort of poking my
Who are your influences of comedy? Who do you credit for your sense of humor?
Man, it's pretty varied, but I really credit my dad and my mom for exposing me to a lot of it. I do think it's ironic that sometimes they showed me really classic old stuff like Abbott and Costello and, you know, Chaplin or whatever like that. But then like Saturday Night Live and like Steve Martin and, you know, John Belushi and God, who else? Anybody you can think of. But like Bob Newhart, old guys, Bob Hope,
yeah.
You know, anybody, Eddie Murphy, like anybody like from the 50s, 60s or 70s, I was exposed to pretty early.
Right. The good stuff. The really creative stuff.
Yeah. And I just remember being like really little and, you know, dancing on the mantle with my brother as the Blues Brothers when we were like 4 or 5 and I was like 5 and he was like 2. And so
put
I mean,
on the glasses and do the whole thing.
The briefcase full of blues album. And that was really
Rubber Biscuit.
Yeah, and then we thought that was so funny. Like, it was just so crazy to us. John Candy, you know, anybody. Bill Murray is probably my favorite of all time. I mean,
me too. Yeah. One of those guys that just can do anything. Drama, comedy. Just looking at him, you start to laugh.
Yeah, I just, you know, he's a very thoughtful artist across the spectrum of things that he can do, for sure. But he's, like, he just also has an air and a harmony about how he speaks and thinks.
I love Steve Martin and have for years, and he's another one of those guys. But if you go back and listen to old Steve Martin albums,
oh man,
they don't hold up well.
Yeah, no,
some of it's very funny, and others like, why was I lying on the floor holding my gut, I can't even make myself smile now.
No, totally. I think it holds up. Maybe it holds up for me maybe a little differently. I think it does. A lot of it holds up, but I get what you're saying in the sense that you listen to the material and it's not as like cutting or biting or like doesn't seem edgy.
Yeah.
But it has a smoothness to it. But Steve Martin would show up at places and the whole thing was like life was a performance art.
Yeah.
And he would just, it'd just be like, oh, a party's here. Because he's so fun and cool. He really is that fun and cool.
Yeah.
And he, you know, talk about a guy who can literally do everything.
Yeah.
Plays like virtuoso banjo.
He's touring now with a banjo show.
Won Grammys for that. Has like 20 books, you know, 20 plays, whatever. You know, all the different stuff. He's an art like aficionado. Like he knows everything about art. He's an interesting cat for sure.
He is
in addition to being... Yeah, just great. Transplants and Automobiles is one of my favorite movies of all time.
So you were John Candy, Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Your two guys came together right there on one movie.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, they were a great tandem in that one. I loved watching it with my grandfather and my parents and my brother. Because my grandpa used to think it was so funny. It was like a racy movie, but that he also thought was funny.
Yeah, those aren't pillows or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah. I think he related very much to the work ethic that the guy in the film had. Retrospectively, you know, I think he saw that dude on the road, you know, sleeping in hotels with his buddy, and was trying to get back to his family. I think my grandpa did that a lot of his life. So I think he dug that movie.
That's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's odd and cute. It's great.
What other comedy movie would you recommend from your collection? You like, you have to see this, or maybe is there one that you don't think was widely known or accepted, but is high regards for you?
Man, I'm one of those people. Whenever I get asked this, I've seen so many of them. Because I was such a voracious consumer of comedy growing up, and I didn't even realize till I look back now, and I'm like, geez, I really like everything. But I mean, I as far as like classics, you know, I'm very informed by like the Ghostbusters, Ivan Reitman, John Landis, Animal House vibe
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah.
In the more modern times, I think everything, you know, like Adam McKay and Judd Apatow and all those guys. I mean, there's a reason all those guys are doing well. They're pretty great at what they do. So, but in terms of like more off the beaten path ones. I mean, it's pretty popular now, but the Royal Tenenbaums is pretty big for me.
One of my favorite.
Yeah.
Wes Anderson is big for me.
Like, yeah.
That, the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, that was real wacky.
Oh, and I tell everybody to see it, and then people will go, I hated that.
Yeah.
Why are you recommending that? Because it's hard to tell people about good movies.
It's like his movies are very much an acquired taste for some people. Mm-hmm. Like if you'd never seen his movies and you just saw that, you'd be like, whoa, that was intense. Who is this guy? And you'd look in and you'd probably find other stuff,
right?
You like, because you like that type of film.
The only I love the other one, Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah, that was good.
But the other one, with Bill Murray, which I hate to say, the Aquatic Life of
Steve Zissou,
did not really work for me. It was one of those like I sat through it, I made it, I laughed a couple times.
No, for sure. You know what I love about that movie is the soundtrack is amazing, because Sue George is like this Brazilian guitar player, and he sings the whole soundtrack is David Bowie covers. And it's all in Portuguese.
I don't think I even realized that.
And it's like if you go to YouTube and you go listen to it, or you just download the album. It's an album you can listen to front to back, and it's amazing. The videos of him recording it online, where he's just like smoking a cigarette and playing those songs, is really great.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you know, we're here in Denver, and you've now burst on the comedy scene with it, because you're producing a lot of shows. You got into the producing.
Yeah, well, I don't have getting into it, you know, later, I feel like a little bit later than a lot of people who are like, you know, 20 and like, I want to be a comic. You know, I had kids and a wife.
But that gives you more to talk about.
It really does. It does now. But it took me a minute to do more performing versus producing, because ultimately, I just want to work.
Uh-huh.
I'll do, you know, I want to perform. I want to make stuff.
Right.
Consistently. So I'm trying to, you know, make it so that I can do everything, and I don't have an aversion to doing performing. In fact, I love improvised anything, in particular improvised camera acting and things like that. I've got a web series coming out to that effect. That's what I feel is like my strong suit.
Like an improvised sitcom-y kind of thing, or where it's an actual thread?
Yeah,
of the show?
Yeah, yeah. It's with Andrew Orvidal. It will be out on Funny or Die next month in September, but it'll be part of Sexpot Comedy, which you alluded to, which Kayvon Kalatbari, who is my partner, my business partner, owns Sexy Pizza in Denver Relief, hence the name Sexpot.
Uh-huh.
Just sort of a fun thing to put together and make into a weird brand, right? And
I had wondered that when I kept seeing the logo of the Sexpot. I'm like, how is Sexpot
comedy? Let me use this opportunity to get a plug in.
Okay.
Get into Denver Relief this weekend. Grab yourself some premium cannabis. It's Denver's oldest dispensary. Ian Sieb, Kayvon Kalatbari, Nick Heiss, Jill, everyone will take care of you down there. Head out for the festival this week. There's a big discount. Go to Denver Relief.
You know, and since you brought that up, let's talk about this.
Okay, sure.
I am learning now about the pot culture of Colorado, having lived here for years and years and years.
Sure.
And known about pot for years and years and years. All of a sudden, there's things you're supposed to know that you don't. There's all these brands and stores and strains and
equipment.
Equipment and
music festivals, like genres of things that are spouted from the central trunk of cannabis. Yeah.
What happened to just, hey, I have a lid in my pants. Do you want to smoke some dope? I mean, now it's just this whole like business subculture. You're supposed to know the music and the, you know, if you get high to this song, it helps your shoulders. You know, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, yeah. They all have crazy names. I think that it's weird because I like working with Kayvon in that respect and Ian and those guys, because they're interested in furthering that culture, I feel like, because I think the stereotypical, like, just everyone's got a Bob Marley shirt and it's just obliterated. And you know what I mean? Like that whole, they're not even really big fans. And I don't mean to speak for them. I could be wrong about this, but I feel like Kayvon at least feels this way. Like they're not big fans of they're not against it, but because of freedom of assembly and all that, but like the 420 in the park and stuff like that. Like, because it dumbs it down to a point where it is just a stupid Mardi Gras festival.
Right.
You know?
We're high and out of our minds.
Yeah, and it's like the reality is, and I actually, in this, this is, I do believe this, is that it's less harmful than alcohol, and that 1 in 7 people die every year in Colorado from alcohol-related stuff.
Yeah.
And no one died. I mean, I think we can all agree that maybe the jury's out relative to you know, certain things relative to cannabis and the effects of it. But I think that the overwhelming science is that that it's less harmful. And I think that they would just like to approach that in a constructive way.
Yeah. Well, and there's so much good stuff that can come out of the hemp and things, you know, as far as medical and the usage. The only thing that I would find that would be a problem is the younger users. Is because, you know, research has said if you get high too young, it affects the brain chemistry and all that kind of stuff. So shouldn't that be one of those deals?
I think that the research that you're talking about is paid for by a pharmaceutical settlement group.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's part of a $2 million fund that they're advertising that fact with right now, that the governor is, and the governor is trying to distance himself from it. Because
chicken, you know, looper,
yeah. Because and that's Kayvon's like ultra ego that he does, but to protest it. But you know, he takes a lot of money from that side of the aisle, and you know that's how politics works. There's so much money in politics. That's it. So you know his point is like don't benefit from the tax revenue, but then poo poo it everywhere and you know Chris Christie it up and say that we're a bunch of clowns in Colorado. That's not productive.
Right.
He could be embracing it on a much gentler angle and still be okay and eventually become the president. And I think that's, you know, part of everybody's political gamesmanship. And he's a really good one, you know, politician wise. So, you know,
yeah,
that's how that stuff works. I don't know where we started on that.
Well, we are just the pot state now though. Everybody thinks of us, even though Washington state is legal. Everybody looks at us. Have you noticed that? Like,
yeah.
Everybody looks at Colorado. Hey, you want to go, hey, they got it too.
You know,
why are we
I think
on the
it
news?
Might be because we're having a lot of fun, Steve. I think it might be because, the economy is the fastest moving economy of all 50 states. People are very, on both sides of the aisle, I think, are pretty progressive on a lot of similar issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the, you know, the right and the left people here can coexist a little bit better. And I really do believe that common ground as part of that is cannabis a little bit. I don't think that, first of all, obviously I don't want, you know, teenagers or whatever to go smoke weed. I really generally just don't. Relative to the perception across the country of what Colorado's like, I think that generally that's one asset. I don't think that it has become the identity of the state, and I think that's up to us to not.
We got to keep it down a little bit.
Perpetuate it, but yeah. But if you go into, I mean, if you go into a dispensary, have you been into one?
I have not yet. I was going to the other day when I was downtown, and a friend of mine gave me a card to drop by.
Whether you want some or not, it's worth it to just go check it out to see what the experience is. Because you go in there, there's product in labeled jars. You stand in a little aisle thing. You have a bud tender that helps you. And all
bud tender
and all yep and all the lab and different strains available, and then all the edibles and things labeled and not in big Starburst logos or anything. They're plain packaging and whatever. So and then you have to take it out in a bag that can't have sunlight, a compliance bag. So I have a zip. You know, there's a zipper bag that you take
right.
in out. So it's weird. So I feel like all of the things that are. Like, there are definitely not a lot of dispensaries, in my experience, that are still available that you walk in and you're like, oh, this is just like some thugged out weird pot den.
Yeah.
Like,
there's not, like you said, there's not a Bob Marley.
Yeah, I mean,
there's not some Rasta music.
If you're into that, great. I'm not denigrating that. I just feel like, in terms of the culture of it, you know, which you talked about before, it's like, I think it's up to the people that are engaged in it to make of it what it should be. And sometimes, you know, Kayvon's point, I think, is, you know, 2 weeks of two short shows at random venues in town, you know, might take away from it a little bit. In one way, it's a great celebration for the people that are into it. And so far, you know, mostly the behavior is pretty decent, I think. But it's also just, you know, there is a stigma where it's like, okay, so literally we can't do anything downtown for a week and a half.
You got to block off streets.
Yeah, so I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I don't really care.
Well,
I don't really care in general. I mean, I just whatever.
Well, I'm kind of glad to hear that you go, well,
I'm pretty indifferent about it.
You know, the Bob Marley thing.
Whatever people want to do is good with
whatever,
me.
Yes, but whatever you want to do. I'm not against the Bob Marley thing, but I understand that's a little weird, because I've always thought that is
like
a little weird.
I like Bob Marley.
I do. I love Bob Marley, and the One Love. And but to go just drive by us down the street, and you see a Bob Marley towel over a window. You know what I mean? You're like, I bet a pothead lives there. You know what I mean? How did that become the symbol of like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, totally. I think as many Bob Marley flags as you see in windows, I think you won't see as many suburban people and people of all walks of life smoking, because you go in there and it's like, it'll be a guy who's 65, 70 years old, and there'll be a 25-year-old going to Red Rocks.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone's, you know, there for different reasons, and it's interesting to me. I think there's a more silent majority on that than people let on.
Yeah.
And I think it's much more socially acceptable, because I think people smoke at their houses and hang out with their friends and have barbecues and drink beers now. I think that's what happens.
I was telling a friend the other day.
And I don't think it should be, like, necessarily taboo.
Because it's legal? And your neighbors can do it. All of a sudden, I step out on my deck in the back here, and I go, I think there's a skunk in the neighborhood. Oh, wait, it's probably one of my neighbors. You have to kind of get, I'm okay with that.
That's a tricky one, because it's like, if you don't want to smell it, it's very pungent. So to your point earlier about, like, it feels like there's all these different gadgets and whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, the vaporizer pens have almost no odor. And that's a way that a lot of people, like, even at shows, will go.
So they're great for at work.
They're great. Hey, I'm not advocating any of this. This sounds like I'm just a giant cannabis salesman right now. I'm just talking about the issue, because I'm loosely associated with it.
I think what's really funny is all of your guys that you were talking about is the perfect grouping of business people. You've got pizza.
Oh, man.
You've got a burrito, and you've got a pot distributors. Like, they are the
Pete Turner slanging burritos. You got Kayvon over there with a big slice of sexy pizza, and
it's the perfect storm of people that came together. We said, you know what? I'll sell them stuff. I'll make them hungry. You guys,
well, and the illegal,
take care of my customers.
It's all part of the same ecosystem. There's a music scene. I mean, and Pete really sponsors the hell out of that too, with Virgil Dickerson. And
well, I've been impressed seriously with the whole Illegal Pete, the way they do comedy and they promote comedy.
Yeah.
And Ben Roy's comedy album.
Absolutely.
I think they're a power.
Yeah.
In the comedy business.
You know, it's there's the old cheesy George Lucas quote that I always bring out, that's called, digital is the great equalizer. And what I mean by that is, we're doing what we're doing right now in the Remasculate Studios. You can make stuff anywhere.
Right.
And so Ben is crazy prolific and put out two albums on their label. Andrew Orvidal's album is great and was reviewed very well. And Adam Katenholland's album was great and reviewed very well. And so all sold well, you know, through an iTunes store, through a couple other avenues like that. And I think Ben's album hit number two.
Yeah, I set
in comedy. That day, and that's pretty rad
him.
From Denver. Yeah, as the
remember
numbers got up,
going,
I was trying to help
10,
it. Yeah,
I'm number seven. Come on, guys. I'm like, you know, come
oh,
on.
Yeah. I was definitely rooting for him. You know, those albums are so good, and they're cut here by Denver people. And what a great tribute. Everybody go check it out. Buy Ben Roy's album, buy Adam Katenholland's album, buy Andrea Orvidal's album.
And when is yours coming?
I don't know. I have a couple concept things that are in the works, but I have to figure out what I'm doing with my life. No, that's not true. I have a lot of video projects and more performing and things to be doing here. And sexpotcomedy.com is going to come out next week. I'm pretty confident. Next week or the week after. Sexpotcomedy.com is something I'm working really, really hard on right now.
Well, I actually love what you guys are doing, because Ben has been on the show several times, and I've done some stuff with Ben. I'm a big supporter and a fan of Ben and the guys.
Oh, totally.
And so
yeah, Ben's so great.
And Ben had told me a while back, this is kind of weird, you know, it's one of those, you, me too. He told me that when he first started, that he watched me and learned. He learned from me because I never saw you die on stage, whether it was five people or 500 people. You gave the same. So, and I go, yeah, but I feel the same thing with you. I watch you,
it's cool.
And I think, God, I need to write more.
Yeah.
I need to, you know.
Oh, man. So, anybody who sees Ben thinks that.
So we had this great mutual love for each other. And he's been on the podcast here before, and we're going to do it again. But he has inspired me to jump harder back into the comedy scene. Because I got out of radio and put my foot back in, and I called clubs that I worked for. And he's like, just work. Don't you want to just do whatever you do? You love comedy. Just do it. Just do whatever. And I think that's great what you guys do because, you know, like you said, it's improvised this. Let's turn a camera on. Let's have a show at a bar. And the more I do it, the more interesting I find that. Because I used to be like, I am not doing another show at a fucking bar again.
No, totally.
I'm, you know, but then I'd done a couple lately and you're like, Jesus, this was some fun shit again.
I think the traditional comedy environment has changed radically over the past 10 years. And so there's all these places like, yeah, you got to be ready to go. I think it's South by Southwest. Adam did a show in a dude's living room. And then there's another one where you're, like you said, you're on a stage with 1,000 people, like at the edge of a cliff.
Yeah.
And then there's a place that's a weird bookstore and a weird comic book store, you know, and a, like an old men's club or a vet's lodge. Like the comedy is everywhere now. It's so you kind of got to go where the audience is sometimes, I think. And I think it's interesting because you're right. Like the way that the shows are being pushed idea wise, it makes the exercise of comedy much more interesting on a day to day basis. Cause you're like, oh, those people are doing this, you know, Comics Against Civility is a card game where comics write cards, and it's very much like another card game that will go unmentioned. but it's a freaking, it's an amazing game, and everybody should go see that here in Denver. It's every week. It's amazing.
Where is the weirdest place that you've performed? Where would you go? Oh, and when you walked in, you went, oh, this is not going to work. Why are we even trying this?
I don't know. An actual place. I'm trying to think of. I feel like there's some like weird, like function type rooms, like where you're like, I guess at a student union where you're like in a, like a cafeteria,
and it's just like gig that everybody hates.
Yeah, and it's just like there was one of those where it's like, yeah, it was like during the day, and no one wants to hear from you. I think that's the only one that really stands out. Most of the rest of them are pretty traditional bars. I think there have been times where I was so tired, and the bar was so uninto anything that was going on. Uh-huh. Where you're just like, of course, I don't want to go do this.
How do you fight your way through it? Where do you put yourself in your head that you go, all right, I'm just gonna go up?
I think.
How do you find that place? Because there's times that you know you're either angry, it's like that'll come off because you're like, yeah, you fuckers don't even want me here. Yeah. I don't care. I'm mad. But then you still have to kind of seem like, hey, I'm enjoying this because some people are listening and enjoying it.
This is going to sound really foundational and weird, but I think I try and remember that the purpose of all of this is sort of a scam. It's all to have fun. So even when you feel like shit, it's like, let's go make it fun. And, you know, there was a show a couple weeks back, and actually Adam was like, dude, we're going to make it fun. I'm like, great. Because I was just like so run down, so tired. And you just, I don't know, you just got to remember that that's the purpose of it. Now, sometimes it doesn't matter. But also, I think it's like remembering that it's for you and not necessarily for the audience.
Right.
And I don't mean that rudely against the audience because we love the audience. We love to entertain the audience, all that stuff. But it's like the Bugs Bunny guy, Chuck Jones, he used to say, people used to go, well, did you love making cartoons for kids and all that stuff? And he said, I didn't make them for kids. I made them for myself. And that's like, we're doing it for the love of the game. Right. So like you get paid $0 and you got paid a lot of money in comedy. So, you know, the idea is that, you know, at a lot of these weird venues like you're talking about, you do stuff for free.
Yeah.
And you do stuff for a little bit of money. And those things are just fun things to go do. And we've been able to help build a scene here, I think, or grow the scene at least, by bringing in, you know, pretty famous people that will come do a free show because they want to come hang out with their friends and they genuinely love comedy. And yes, they get paid great money at Comedy Works or at the Paramount or wherever the hell else. But then they come do our shows because they want to have a blast. Right. They want to have a good time. So,
well, I did a show just recently for Elliot Woolsey.
Oh yeah,
his that was great. His show that he does. I can't even think of the name of it right now, but it was one of those that the mic was not working properly.
Oh okay.
And it was, as you got too close, it would do the congratulations.
Yeah. Was it at Barracuda's when he was doing that mic?
Noonan's.
Okay. And that was a while ago. I wasn't sure which one you were talking about.
So I basically had to go up and just put leave the mic in the stand and not take it out because, you know, I'm used to working. I could be loud. I sure. Just like, can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
And it turned out to be one of the best gigs I've done in a while, you know, partial sure. standing ovation. But it put me in a different mindset I wasn't comfortable because I'm out of the mic isn't right, the lights are a little weird. It was in a, you know, one of those banquet rooms.
I really enjoy when that stuff happens though now. There was you know, during the High Plains preview show, it was at a new venue and the lights went out a couple times. So that's a little distracting. So that's never fun. But we just plowed through it and were positive and kept going. But sometimes when that happens, it's like the best. I did a show with Debbie Shear down at a bar called Blush and Blue with Timmy Lasley. And, you know, the mics went out and we literally sat in couches with the people in the audience and had like an improvised weird talk show. And they loved it. And it was super fun and we loved it. We had a blast. We were just playing with it and talking to the audience and breaking the wall. And like it was all great. So,
well, I think that's how you find who's genuinely funny. And who just wants to be a comic. Because there's people that can only be funny if they recite the words that they have written down.
Right.
And you probably have seen a few of these. And then there's the others like, now you're on. You know, something went wrong, fix it.
Yeah.
Save it.
Yeah. Or,
and that was one of the things I had with radio. I was told with radio, I was one of the few comics that's ever gone from stand-up to radio and done well.
Right. Oh, totally.
Is because my boss said, you get it. You understand.
Well, you're actually manufacturing entertainment on a moment-to-moment basis. That sounds ridiculous, but I mean, you're like you're thinking about what you're doing. You're trying to engage an audience in addition to going through material that's great and proven. And some people obviously are way more heavy on the great and proven material and stick with it for 10 plus years and you know whatever and only do that. And I think everybody goes to those things at any moment, but only do that. And then there's people that are constantly writing and trying to get better. Mm-hmm. And then there's people that are just straight up improvisers. And you know, I think hopefully the best versions of all of us are people that can do a little bit of everything.
Right.
And and hopefully at the end of the day, that stands out.
I'm new to
a lot of the stand-up stuff. Like I don't have the hours on stage that a lot of people have, and I'm grinding it out now to just do that also. And continue to get better, and I'm enjoying it, and I feel like I am getting better. So that's
now, good. What is your style? Would you say are you writing about everything in general, family, you? Is it that kind of that? This is a little bit of therapy because I'm writing things that coming out. What is your?
I think I come up onto the stage sometimes. If I'm wearing like a tie or something, I can look a little more like put together. I clean up reasonably well, hopefully. but most times I'm coming out looking like an eighth grader with like a hat and you know kind of bleary eyed and a beard.
An eighth grader with a beard.
yeah, and sort of just stumbling out like a.
My mom just dropped me off.
Shaggy. Here. From Scooby-Doo, yeah. So, but then I start talking about, you know, my family, and I think they see me differently. And they're like, oh, this guy's like, actually, like when they hear, hopefully what comes out of my mouth, you know, this guy's actually got a family and, you know, has probably a little bit more to his life than we thought when we saw that he was dressed like a, you know, guy trying to be cool in middle school.
Yeah, I get that a lot. That's exactly because of the way my, you know,
I've got the
Lynyrd Skynyrd look and the hair. And I've had people come up to me after go, you were so much better than we thought when you walked out. There's one lady goes, when you walk out, I thought, oh my God, this is going to be horrible.
I feel like hopefully we're getting to a point where all appearances like that are shed because I think you just see so much talent from everywhere. So it just... Like there's so much media that exposes everybody to that. So hopefully at some point you having long hair, someone wouldn't be like, or like whatever their perception was or however you, it's like, I'm concerned about what's coming ahead. Caution. This guy looks crazy.
Yeah.
Like hopefully like at some point, most of the population would move away from a thought like that. Cause obviously it's ludicrous.
Well, we're supposed to be moving away from that.
Yeah, but on everything, hopefully.
But it's kind of like I just had this discussion with several people about the whole Ferguson thing that's going on in Missouri right now, which is horrible.
Right.
And Derek Rush, another comic, and I were chatting about this.
Sure.
Is that I was raised all these years ago of let's all come together, peace train, you know, the OJs.
Yeah.
And I really believe that, you know what I mean?
Cooperation, Sesame Street stuff.
Yes. And yeah. I was raised that way, and I really yeah. believe that. Yeah. And I've always tried to do that.
Right.
And I always get annoyed when people want to bring race or something into it instead of just going, you know, shouldn't if we stop talking, it'll go away. It's sort of like you were saying with the images of comedy. At some point, we're supposed to go, hey, we're yeah. all one people.
Yeah.
We're just one people.
It's tricky because I think that everyone lives a different life, and I think it's a racially charged situation. So I think that the way that is explored by everybody differently,
mm-hmm.
You know, and how they experience the world. So I'm with you in the sense that no one likes to have someone, or I think playing a race card or playing, you know, a label of anything that's like a generic, that's not race or specific, just anything that's like a label. I think that like, that's always never fun, but it is what it is. I think that whole situation is really fucked up right now.
And, I agree.
And
gonna get worse.
Well, and it's like, this journalist last night, like that got grabbed by the arm for taking an establishing shot of the Ferguson sign last night. And that, like, the whole transcript is there, and like, what they're like, I'm the law, like, get the fuck out of here. And it's just like,
I am the law.
Yeah. So it's like, there's, you know, there's actions that require scrutiny, and then there's, and then it's like, well, how much of it is like perpetuating itself? And, you know, the whole thing's fucked up. I honestly have been in a hole a little bit on the subject because I've been getting ready for the comedy festival.
Yeah.
So I'm not an expert at all. That's so we're clear.
that's cool, but the point was that we were talking about how just perception of things.
Yeah, perception
everything
of people.
Needs to change.
I think it has. I think it has a lot. I think we've come a long way. I think there's still, you know, I think, unfortunately, I think that there's, you know, we want to pretend like there's not a lot of racial discord in the country or in the world, and I think that is proven not to be the case over and over, and I think it's more prevalent sometimes than we want to admit, which sucks, but I do think that's a reality. I also think that you know, when we're kind of to back way off that topic, like when we're talking about how people are perceived, I feel like there's tons and tons and tons of work to do, but I would like to think that we've gotten further down the road, I hope.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I said the other day, I know it sounds cliche.
I think we're
some of my best friends.
Yeah, well,
you know, it's so cliche, but you go, the way I grew up, some of my best friends. So it's not.
Yeah.
I just want a better world for everybody.
Yeah, man. I think hopefully everybody does. I think,
and that's where comedy comes
it's
in.
You know,
that's a big, to me, is one of those deals that it used to be we laughed at everything.
Yeah, you can find a lot of common ground
in that. We all like the same thing. And I thought it was weird when comedy started breaking up. It used to be that you just went to a comedy club,
right?
And or you bought a comedy album. We all love Richard Pryor albums or whatever.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden it turned into, well, Tuesday is Chicano night,
right?
And Wednesday is Urban. It's we started breaking off instead of going,
yeah,
we're all just a comedy,
you know, you
show.
Know what though, Steve? That's just sales stuff. That's just making demographics that you can go sell.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's true.
That's promoters and companies just like, you know, definitely just breaking up people into targets so that they can go sell them products. I mean, that's what that is. And in a miniature comedy setting or in a big corporate level, it's one of the problems that I had, or I don't know, that I struggled with working for such a big company at times, because not because of intrinsically they were big, but because intrinsically my experience was the last 10 years of that was that they did not care at all what I had to say, despite themselves, but whatever.
But it made you who you are today.
Here we are.
I mean, you kept thinking about how can I get out of the corporate world? How can I get funny? What can I do to promote this?
Right.
And, you know, honestly, I think you've done great.
Thanks,
the
man.
Shows that you're doing around town. Who doesn't know Andy Jewett, seriously, in Denver?
I feel like a lot of people don't. I need more Twitter followers. I'm underfollowed, everybody.
Are you?
Yeah.
What's your Twitter handle?
At Andy Jewett. My last name is spelled J-U-E-T-T, at Andy Jewett. No, but yeah, on Instagram and everything. That's always my handle. It'll never change because it's my name.
And it's not supposed to change. Somebody chastised me today for having my email at msn.com. Somebody wrote, geez, you still use MSN?
Yeah.
You know what? You're supposed to pick an email and stick with it. Why confuse the fuck out of everybody?
I have an ancient Hotmail account that is my home space for anything where you sign up for something and you need to get the update or whatever, or like bills or whatever. Yeah.
But isn't that what
I have Gmail
kind
of? And Hotmail. I'm living dangerously on both sides of it. My parents are both still rocking AOL. They're staying loyal and true. Absolutely. So that they got some hot early AOL addresses, and they never let go of them. They got those in their claws.
Got them early. You could get five. You got five.
Yeah, it was the great rush of AOL prefixes.
Yeah. There was, I don't even know. I still have them, I'm sure. But, you know, like just weird fake names that you made up because you had the five chances on AOL.
Right.
So you just you could get five emails. So I would just make fake ones so I could do
emails.
Chat rooms.
I forgot about that.
Remember that you could go into a chat room.
Yeah.
And I'd go in there and just cause trouble. A friend and I, when Princess Diana died, went into a chat room, a Princess Diana chat room, and cleared it out. An actual AOL chat room.
Wait a second. So you went in and they were talking about Princess Diana's death, and what happened?
And we cleared it out.
You mean you just like went in there and just blew it up with terrible comments?
Well, she'd have been a good mother. She'd have been at home, and none of this would have happened. You know what I mean?
Just offending people who are passionate about
we
Princess Diana's death.
You could watch the numbers drop. 800.
Oh, totally.
Eight, you know.
Oh yeah, because they have the little count in the highlighted area.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
Me and another comic, we cleared the room. It was he and I.
That was a good thing to do, is to go into a room of a topic and just be completely obnoxious.
Did you ever do something like that?
Oh, totally. Yeah, that for me that was like around the advent of the internet, was around like high school into college, which sounds ridiculous. I'm old, but. When I was at my parents' house, I definitely remember.
Yeah,
good old AOL chat room.
Well, I was in a chat room. It was a bi-curious chat room, and not that I am at all. But I thought, I'm just here.
Whatever, Steve. We know this is the number one bi-curious masculinity podcast in America.
I'm just here for the comments. But I went in there and was pretending to be a 16-year-old girl that was. Finding out about her sexuality.
Oh, my God. That's a pretty intense admission.
Yeah. And so I'm in there.
I mean, you know this is being recorded,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know. Well,
I know. We're not going anywhere weird.
Too weird.
Hopefully.
But anyway.
It started weird, though.
My ex-wife goes, what are you doing? And I go, I'm just, I know I'm busted, but I'll tell you the truth. I'm sitting here pretending to be a 16-year-old girl that thinks she might be a lesbian. And she goes, we don't talk like that. Move over. So my ex-wife...
I don't know if anyone caught this, but she is an ex-wife.
Yeah, she's...
They are no longer married. Steve is impersonating teenage girls in a chat room. No longer married. I'm not saying there's a direct causality, but you guys might want to take notes on this. Just as a nugget of teachable learning from your homeschool podcast edition.
That's homeschool. That's right.
That's a homeschool
tip.
But
I just always found it amusing that I wasn't using the right verbiage to be a 16-year-old girl.
So I needed
help.
Yeah. You didn't know the vernacular of the day.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to respond to this.
That. Have
you? I had a teacher. I guess this is terrible to talk about. I heard it through the grapevine. I confirmed on the internet. I had a teacher that was soliciting, that I found out that was arrested for soliciting underage boys or girls. I don't know on one of those. I don't know if it was probably not an AOL.
It was actually one of
it was probably not an AOL chat room. Yeah, and he was an old English teacher, and I really liked him. I was really bummed to find out about it.
Oh man.
Yeah. Bring it down, guys. There's pedophiles out there on the internet. Be wary. All the information is public.
Well, this really is...
Get informed!
This really did happen, and it's in my act now. But
yeah.
My mom says to me, are you on Facebook? You know how they...
That's amazing.
And I go...
Are you on my Facebook?
Yeah, and I go, yes, ma'am. And she goes, you be careful. There's predators.
She loves you. She's looking out for you.
Yeah,
she's seen some MSNBC lockup. She's seen some.
That's what I thought.
Fucking crime shows on Discovery Channel.
Well, I'm like, are you talking to me or about me?
Yeah,
that's
whatever.
What I'm trying to figure out.
I don't know. What are the cable channels these days? She's seen too much Court TV. Is that a thing? I don't think court that's been TV. A thing for a while.
Yeah, I think that's gone.
I'm only
to catch a predator.
I'm living in 90s and early 2000s basic cable land. I have no idea.
Do you feel like at some point in your life you might have gotten trapped in a certain time space? Like you feel like I'm here more than I am?
Oh, you mean like that I didn't ever move on from a time?
Slightly in a way. Not
like you're always stuck in a time?
Yeah, not in a bad way, but there's a certain time that you feel like, oh, is it really past 2009?
Oh, I got you.
Is there a time?
Yeah, where you're like, holy shit, it's 2014?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that for sure. When I hit age 35 and became eligible to become president, I realized, oh, that's the last...
The next stop.
That's the last thing. It was renting a car at 25. Yeah, there's renting a car at 25. There's 35, you can become the president. And then I guess you get an AARP card, and that's it. That's it. There's nothing.
That's it. Then the train, like an old Western movie, flies off the cliff.
Yeah, but I remember it vividly being turning into 2000 and feeling like it's not that long ago, of course. And now it's like, oh, that's freaking 15 years ago. It's insane.
And it's snowballing. It's kind of like life is sort of like when you look at a roll of toilet paper and it seems like a really full roll.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you get toward the end, it goes...
Totally. The last second spin out.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, pretty well documented studies on this that the way that we perceive either actual time or perceived time, that you live... Oh, man, I'm going to get this wrong. I feel like you live half your life conceptually time-wise by the time you're 25.
Uh-huh.
And then the rest feels like the other half of your life. Like time slows down or speeds up radically. And you're just like, it all blurs together more and that you consume, you know, the way you consumed your experience as a human by the time you're like 20 or something, you've already lived like 2/3 of your life.
Yeah, well,
or something like that.
It makes total sense because I read years ago in Psychology Today.
You come into the world and they're like, oh, this is how time works. And it takes you like 20 years
to figure it out. Well, remember, you're like 14. I'm never going to be 16. I'm never going to be able to drive. It seemed like forever.
Yes.
You know, that bit of time. Well, I read years ago in Psychology Today, they said most of what you know or learn
is
by the time you're 5 years old.
Yeah, by the time you get to kindergarten, you've learned this foundation.
The foundation of everything. Right, wrong, left, right, high, low.
That's why early childhood development is so important, and my mom's a teacher. She was retired, but I mean, there's a lot of like influence in my life. My ex-wife was a teacher, for a while, and you gotta have as positive an environment for a kid as possible when they come into the world. And I think that's, you know, when you see a lot of places that struggle education wise and broken home wise and things like that, you know, that cycle perpetuates itself. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, you know, as we get smarter, hopefully as a species, there are hopefully more informed people too that, you know, are a little more focused maybe on those first 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, because that's the very important time.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't know that I even ever said this. I mean, I mentioned it with the Boston College thing. I have a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old. So I have old kids, and I'm reasonably young. So,
well, you started young.
Yeah. Listen, Steve, I've never denied it. I love to fuck. You know what I'm saying? Sorry.
That's okay. I understand. And most people are right there with you.
Yeah, I mean, everybody does. The common themes... There's a guy that used to own Castleman's downtown. His brother owns it, just him now. But he used to always talk about how, you know, the only constants throughout the ages are really people love to like party, eat food, have sex, whatever. And like that's pretty much
it. We're Romans.
So, yeah, we're basically all Romans with more equipment now. We're all a little bit smarter and hopefully a little bit more standing up straight.
Yeah.
But that's about it. So, like, let's all be less proud of all of our own opinions also.
Well, a friend of mine that years ago was in a 70s funk band. He's an old guy. We were talking about music.
Ooh, that sounds great.
70s funk band. Oh, remember that whole boop?
Oh, yeah.
Boop, yeah. But he goes, our manager told us to never bring our wives and girlfriends to a gig. And I said, why? He goes, because you perform better. The manager says you perform better when they're not around. Yeah, because you are putting on a show, you know.
I don't know, man. I definitely don't feel that way. I how do you feel about it? I know Janet's at a lot of your shows.
Yeah,
I've seen her. at where you are.
And yeah, it doesn't bother me at all.
This is a tricky question now. It's like, do you prefer it or do you, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because
you're
I'm locked into performing and yeah. I enjoy performing. But I understand like maybe for bands and things, because that whole thing is a sexuality thing. Remember, it's like you couldn't even tell somebody you were married. Bands were like, don't tell people
Steve,
you're married.
There's so much sexiness in comedy these days. Haven't you been looking around?
That's right.
Haven't you seen the
sex pot comedy?
Yeah, there's so much sex. No, yeah, I get you. I don't know. I always like when if I'm dating someone that I'm really into, if they're there, I like that. Not always, but most of the time,
again, you might be
if they're up for it,
them,
like, I don't want them to feel like they're forced into it because I don't care. Like, I want them to come as much as they want to attend.
Do you ever have anybody, a girlfriend, family member, anything, go, why did you have to say that?
No, but I've brought my mom to shows before where they're pretty raunchy shows, and I think, you know, when you don't go to any of my shows and you hear about them on the internet or through friends or family or someone that Andy's doing this on the internet or on this TV thing or this magazine or whatever, it's like, and then you plunk her down in the middle of a show where people are saying the word cock 500 times.
Right.
You know, that can be pretty jarring, and I think...
After 500 times, this edge is worn off.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a little... I get it. Like, I feel bad for putting people in shows that sometimes like that, but, like, I also want them to see what goes on at shows.
Yeah. Do you ever... Now, when you produce shows, do you think about the lineup and how it should work? Like, because I think a lot of times people go... I don't even care. It's going to be three comics. Well, you know, I like to talk about my kids a little bit, and it's hard to make people relate to a kid thing when you've just had a high energy, poked my girlfriend in the butt act right in front of you. Do you know what I mean? It's like you have to kind of conceptualize how the show should grow or build.
Yeah. Oh, I get you. I get you. I don't know, man. I feel like if you do it both ways, sometimes I definitely want to see the venue and see what the audience is like and what the previous comics are doing, you know, just to, like you said, to be in the flow of it and react to it. Then there are some times where it's like, you just don't want to be in the green room or you don't want to be around people.
Yeah. I've been,
and there. I'll just like about, I would say about half the time I go outside for a while and then come in like right before I have to do something. Cause I want to, I want to have my own like quiet space to meditate for a minute to like, go over stuff and just go over jokes and
My girlfriend Janet does that to me. It's like, sure. Is it okay if I come to the green room?
Yeah,
not tonight. Or no, it's fine, because there are certain times that I feel the same way. Like,
yeah, sure.
I need to go into my head. I need to try to remember the new stuff that I wrote. I don't need to be talking about anything else.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely. I think you just make the boundary and you go, hey, this is. I think you. Communicate how reliant you are on being present and you know, to that whoever you're with, and how reliant you and how many other things that you're doing in your brain and, and also as tasks to get not just be doing jokes. Like, there's more to it than that, so you know, to talk to people and meet the other comic, and you know, there's a lot of whatever.
How did because I always thought that Robin Williams was one of those guys that could just walk out of let's walk into a room and walk on stage, you know,
just like magic. You see people that are so great, you're like, oh, they just are like that.
He just walked the stage. He just walked out of did a guest set. Hey, I'm here. Walked the stage. Boo. You know, it's like,
yeah, you guys will enjoy this set. Well, I can't do a terrible Robin Williams.
That wasn't bad though. Actually, it wasn't bad.
So, Malibu rum, delicious. Think pink, relax. I'm just reading posters on Steve's
But see, if you do posters. It in Robin's voice and cadence, everything sounded funny.
Yeah. No, he was... Well, yeah, he was a person that, like, his heart you could feel in his delivery.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? That sounds real...
No,
cheesy, but I think it's true. I think he was a highly sincere and genuine person and also a highly intelligent person and could communicate a lot by things that maybe... instinctively that we don't understand as we consume anybody that's funny.
Yeah, if you ever watched some of his interviews or watched him do, he would go so big and so manic, and then it would come down to almost childlike, you know?
Yeah.
It would come down, you know, I hope I didn't embarrass you. But let's do this again! Let's do it!
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm fine. You know, I'm sorry.
I think he likes the roller coaster of different types of performing.
Yeah.
So he likes to be super loud and like to be super...
Yeah, and I listened to Mark Maron's chill. Podcast the other day, the repeat of his interview with Robin Williams. amazing interview.
I haven't listened to it yet, but I saw a lot of people post it. I'll check that out.
It was one of those where Robin very rarely went past real. Mm-hmm. He stayed talking, and he talked, and he sounded, and I have thought about this, and after my heart surgery, I felt vulnerable, and you go like, this is what more people needed to see.
Yeah, know? I think that people are, because of the reality of how media is produced, it's so good now, and it always has been magic since the beginning of it. But like when you see, the HD moving pictures of people being hysterical or in some big budget thing or in something that looks really great or just comes on to a show and owns it like Robin Williams would, like you said, you just assume that that's how they are. And then you hear him talk with Maren or whoever else like that. It's like, dude, these are people that had kids that have been married more than once that are trying to figure it out like the rest of us.
Totally.
There's absolutely no, like I really enjoyed the demystification of the showbiz process. Not that I know anything, but you know what I mean? Like in terms of all the people that I've met and things like that, how everyone's just trying to kind of figure it out and do the best they can and work really hard. People that are successful work really hard.
Every famous person.
That doesn't happen. They're not like Robin Williams isn't just funny. Like he busted balls on performing for 40 years or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
Well, every probably would have had, some ridiculously amazing movie and stand up to go to.
I agree.
Which sucks.
I think he had been one of those guys that would have aged appropriately through the movies.
He didn't get to be in his Scorsese movie yet where he had a beard and like was awful. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you go and look back, there's a bunch of underrated stuff that he did that was so amazing. And
1 Hour Photo was one of my favorite movies.
Yeah,
where
he
was the creepy guy.
Yeah, he's a great bad guy in Insomnia.
Yeah.
Which is
Al Pacino.
Christopher Nolan's first movie. Yeah, he was really good in that. He was great. And it's a huge bummer and mental illness sucks.
I agree.
Yeah. Fuck you, mental illness.
Yeah, we need an ice bucket for that.
I'm doing way too much swearing on this podcast.
It's what men do.
My mom's going to be so mad.
Are you going to put a link? Mom, I was in a podcast.
No, but now it's like everything that I say, it's like somewhere. So it's like, it exists,
Well, I do a Christian radio show every once in a while.
Oh, sure.
Angie Austin's show.
Oh, okay.
And I enjoy it's radio, and you can just be, but I. Sure. She's always the wall. Tell people how to find you. And I go, I don't really want to. I don't really, because I don't want them to Google and go, oh my God.
Well, I mean, it's tricky because you want to have I think part of why Robin Williams was great is he very much had a persona and then, like you said, was very understated off camera. So he was very much like performing for people. And I think, that's really tough. Whereas I think a lot of personalities choose to approach the career where they're like themselves on camera all the time, where they're just chill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or middle of the road or high energy, but they're always like that. I guess, I don't know. I guess maybe he's probably always high energy like that around the house too. I can't imagine him not running around with his kids. You know what I mean?
Right.
Being ridiculous as possible. What a cool dad.
Picking up things like the dog and making it talk.
Yeah, exactly. Constantly entertaining them to the point of, like, painful laughter. That would be so great.
Yeah. Well, the two of my favorite guys was Robin Williams and Sam Kinison. Those were the guys. And Sam Kinison was the reason that I stayed in comedy. I was the cartoonist for the Houston newspaper and was doing stand-up and was going to go back to just doing newspaper.
Wait, you were doing cartoon?
Yeah, I was the cartoonist for the
amazing.
Paper.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what I went to school for.
Oh, I didn't know
for
that.
For 5 years, I was a cartoonist.
I don't think I ever knew that.
Cartoonist.
Oh, that's great.
So Sam talked me into staying with comedy. He's the one that said, dude, no, this is what you need to be doing. You've got that skill. You've done it. It's behind you.
It's amazing how those comments and those things, you take those to heart from people that you really respect and care about.
Yeah.
Because I think on the flip side, you can sometimes feel like maybe some people you respect and care about aren't as into your act as you want them to be. And that's hard, too. But then, people like Ben Roy, people like that I respect throughout comedy. Like when if there's someone really special that says something really nice, particularly nice, man, that really means a lot. It's cool that Sam Kinison.
Do you have somebody in there, done it to you that like?
I don't know. I think there's been like pep talks and or comments by a lot of people that have been positive for me. Nikki Glaser said something very nice to me privately the other day. I will not share it. She said I was doing a good job.
Was it sexual?
And I liked that. No, not at all. Okay. No. Why do you don't sexualize? This is a. I realize it's a remasculate den, Steve.
But you know how sexy comedy is.
Look, you're right. Comedy is very sexy now. So, no. And she's has a, you know, is with someone. There's nothing. It was all comedy related. God damn it.
It was a compliment.
I didn't want to say that it wasn't a nice compliment, but it was a nice compliment.
Good.
That was from yesterday or 2 days ago. That was great.
So you need another one then.
Sure, let's do it. No, you are already nice. Caitlin Holland was really nice to me on the radio the other day. That was very nice.
Well, good. It really does feel like every once in a while you need almost a little pat on the butt to keep it going. You know, you're swimming along, you're doing great, and you start to slow down, and then you get a little compliment, and you're like, oh, this speeds me up a little bit. Every once in a while you need that little bit of...
I think it's important to give people compliments in general.
Or a pat on the butt.
And catch them doing stuff that's correct, or that's, you know, in the spirit of what hopefully we should be striving to be as humans, no matter what arena that is. But, compliments are good. Jake Wiseman, who's a comic in L.A., used to, you know, just had a good little diatribe about how important it is for everybody to be encouraging of each other. Because it's like everyone's getting better and figuring it out. None of us really have it figured out. You're always learning. Like, there's stuff that I'm encountering, particularly in the stand-up realm, that I didn't realize, you know, was there. And, so
do you feel
all these things are, you're always learning in every
Do you feel like the comics are as helpful to each other? Like when we first started hanging out, everybody, we hung out and gave each other jokes. I mean, seriously, we'd be like, hey, I wrote this the other day, but it's more your style. Hey,
Hey,
I thought of this, and this is a great tag for you. But a lot of times I feel in the comedy scene now, there's a whole lot of, fuck you, I'm taking care of myself.
Well, I think there's a... On one hand, I'd say the scene in general is more inclusive. On the other hand, I'd say that there's always that thread in music or comedy or any art where it's like there's that thread of coolness where you have to like protect yourself by seeming like you're always this cool, calm person, and everyone's sort of focused on their own shit and fucking bring it, pussy. Like, your set's up in 10 minutes. You know, like... You know what I mean? Like...
Right.
That
it's almost like the Jerry Lee Lewis, follow that! Follow that!
Yeah, that can happen. But I think most people are pretty inclusive. And I think that, in terms of collaboration, I don't know if it's as linear as people writing jokes for each other anymore, which I think sucks, because you're totally right. Because it's like, all right, if Steve McGrew is one of my favorite comics, and I know his voice, I'm really into his albums and CMT stuff, and any, you know, your body of work, all the stuff you've done, even locally here, radio or whatever, and you write something that'd be better for, if I write something that'd be better for you, it's great.
Yeah.
Like, that's so fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To me.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I don't think that happens quite as much anymore. I think what happens is people, yes, and other people's bits, you know, a lot more. I think there's a lot more free-form improvising, like you said, where you find out who's funny.
Right.
And that the funny exists a lot of times in someone going, hey, this is a funny concept for you or for me or for whoever. And then the other people on Twitter, you know, jumping on it, and it's just a dumb joke for 20 comments,
right?
You know, or being at a club and having the same thing happen.
Well, I see a lot of times in stand-up now appears that the concept is the actual part of the act. That there's no like as a comic, I'm waiting for, okay, where's the punchline?
Mm-hmm.
But I see a lot of comics now are just like, isn't this weird? Yeah, where is it going?
Sure,
isn't this a okay? But what?
The standard setup punchline delivery stuff, like that is not as I mean, I think that still all exists. There's tons and tons and tons of that.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. Yeah. There's like, I think comics that there are a lot of comics, like the way you just sort of impersonated that person, that seemed to me like a younger comic who didn't quite know
right
what a punchline was yet.
Right. But dang cookish.
yeah, right. It's all delivery, and it's all just being animated and making crazy faces and not a lot of writing.
But I've never been a big set up punchline, because that's jokes. I've always liked stories and twists, and how can you, like, you thought I was going here, but we went over here. And it was one of the reasons that I actually never made, even though all the TV shows that I did, I never got the Tonight Show.
Right.
Well, actually, I was booked once, got bumped, and never got back years ago.
Right.
But I kept submitting stuff, and they were like, well, you don't have any jokes. No, I don't. Because
they're all
jokes.
Stories and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They want the bang, bang, bang stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
And I've never been a huge, huge fan of that. Because a lot of times it almost gets boring to me if somebody is.
Almost, I agree.
It's like they're reading off a clipboard. Are you reading your Twitter?
Well,
to
there,
me?
It depends on your style, though, too. There are great. I mean, listen, they're great. I'm envious of it. Like, I feel like I'm good at writing those types of jokes and not particularly great at delivering them yet.
Me too, because that's when I find Twitter.
I'm really just,
that's what I love about Twitter.
Yeah, I'm just not good at, I'm not as good as I need to be yet with those. I'm better at stories too. So I don't know.
But you know what I'm saying? When you see the guys that like tell a tweet, take a sip, tell a totally unrelated tweet, it's like, oh my God! Just how is it?
I feel like when you were setting all this up, when you're like, and then there's just this guy who's like, "What about those crazy stand-up showers?" like I was picturing like you thinking of like a terrible dude wearing a certain costume or something.
Well, that too.
Who's like name is like a one-word name.
Yeah,
that's just
Banana Man.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like a big compound word that makes you question if this is going to be the worst thing you're about to see.
Please welcome to stage, Banana Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's I hope, yeah. Just gimmicks for the sake of gimmicks, obviously.
Right, right. When did showers come into play? I've always had a bathtub. You too? You know, that's that kind of, you know.
What would be a cool one? Maybe somebody who had a knife and was just slicing stuff while he did the material? And all the punchlines were like
Sam Kinsu. The Butcher.
Yeah.
An actual, he just chops bloody meat while he tells his
Yeah,
routine.
You could do the Ginsu demonstration during the show.
Would that
you could be sort of being sold something. I'd like to see that.
That's hysterical. You know one of those guys like at the rodeo that has like the little headset and like doing the little demonstration?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
This doesn't stick. You can
yeah,
do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And next thing you know, they've gone into stand-up.
I'm a big fan of headset comedy. I'm a big fan. There's not enough people wearing giant ear cans like we're wearing right now to listen.
With a
terrible fucking boom mic. There, yeah.
Where's the Garth Brooks of comedy? That's what I want.
Yes. Yes. There. I wrote a sketch a long time ago where the boss wore a backpack that was powered by a headset that was powered by a backpack for no, absolutely no reason, but addressed all the employees with like a side NFL sideline like headphones and giant ball thing powered by the backpack and took themselves super seriously. I really do enjoy headset comedy.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. Really, sideline comedy.
It makes me laugh.
There's your next show right there.
Sideline comedy.
Ooh, everybody that has to come on stage looks like a coach.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going to be like a podcast where you're like on the sidelines of a game or something.
But no, just everybody has to come on stage wearing that same exact, like you're calling plays.
That'd be so great.
You gotta have the outlook coach.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and there should be a telestrator portion where you have to go walk over to a transparency and write up plays or write jokes or make
diagram it for you.
Weird pictures, yeah.
And have two guys with the stakes on the chain to go, that joke didn't make it all the way.
See, Steve, we're creating a new underground, super goddamn hip Denver comedy show right now. God, I can feel it getting...
Can you feel it?
Headset comedy. You guys, headset comedy. Let's announce
it's
it now.
It's coming. The joke only made it...
Third
it's,
Tuesdays.
It's three and eight. Three and... It's three and... You know, it's... That joke...
It's third and eight.
Yeah. It's,
who are you? God damn it. Yeah, third Tuesday of the month, every month at... where should we do it?
Something that
work,
has...
Let's work in a sponsor.
It has to be a sports bar.
Yeah. Gunnies. Is there a sports bar named Gunnies? I feel like there is.
It's like tailgating comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
That should be outside the game, you know?
Oh,
you
man.
Could do it.
I really just want to wear a headset and try and do real jokes. that's the whole show. Try not to break because you have a headset.
Right. And where could you get an actual NFL style headset?
Oh, I feel like
just one of those actual big giant cans.
I feel like
you could
probably just get one of those, like the kids have all those Turtle Beach video game headphones. Use the video game headphones. Because those are like high quality ear cans and then have the...
Look out for the guy behind you!
And you just plug that, just get an extension cord and plug one of those into the
there you go.
PA and you're done.
I'm coming to watch you do headset comedy.
I totally want to wear a headset and earnestly do stand-up. I really do.
That's, I'm glad we found something
common. New goals, man. New goals.
Well, man, we're at an hour, and I appreciate you doing this.
Absolutely. And, it's cool. Thank you so much for having me.
Again, plug the festival this weekend before people go.
Absolutely. Thanks for letting me do it. High Plains Comedy Festival is this weekend in Denver, Colorado, you guys. Here, let me rattle off some names.
Headliners.
Pete Holmes. He's the E-Trade baby. Fucking get excited, you guys. TJ Miller. Went to East High School. Head boy.
Yogi Bear.
Yogi Bear 3D. Animated cinema of the highest. No, he pimps it so hard. There's nothing shameful about Yogi. It's the opposite. Kumail Nanjiani, also in Yogi Bear 3D's TJ Miller's show, Silicon Valley on HBO.
He used to be on Franklin and Bash, wasn't
he? Yep, he was on Franklin and Bash.
What happened? Do you know what happened to that? Because
him being on it or the show being over?
No, it's not over.
It's still on.
It came back. He's not on it. They actually talked about him not being on the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, he's got so many comedy things, I think, that are happening that's more of the focus, because he has a new show on Comedy Central with Jonah Ray called The Meltdown.
Oh, yeah.
That's just that version of their L.A. show on TV, basically.
Yeah. I'm trying to get on The Midnight Show. I've been...
Yeah, at midnight?
I want to do that, yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool show. Yeah, Chris Hardwick's pretty smart guy.
So who else is on the festival?
Oh, okay, yeah. We'll rattle it off real quick. Dan Soder, Beth Stelling, Kate Berlant, my friend from high school, Eugene Cordero. He's on like Key and Peele and Kroll Show. He's coming in, which is really cool. Nate Bargatze, Nick Thune, Sean Patton, The Fine Gentleman's Club, Kristen Rand, Ian Douglas Terry, Zach Reinert, Chuck Roy, Josh Blue is on our final show, The Last Day at McNichols Park. Come to that. Please come. Saturday's shows are all in the McNichols building in Civic Center Park, which is this cool historical building. At Bannock and Colfax, that's like in the shadow of the Capitol. It's the only building in Civic Center Park.
Oh, cool.
It's amazing. And, you know, come see Pete Holmes' podcast, You Made It Weird, at McNichols. It'll be super cool. There's lots of great guests. Matt Knutson, Chris Fairbanks, the Walsh Brothers.
How can Michael, you remember all
Mike
this?
O'Connell. I don't know. I'm just rambling. Amber Tozer will be here, Pueblo's own. It'll all be great. I'm so excited.
And
get tickets at highplainscomedyfestival.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Come buy some t-shirts. They're going to be dope as hell. And then follow Sexpot Comedy, if you would, please. Sexpot Comedy. Follow The Grolix. Too Much Fun. God damn it. Follow Steve.
It's been
McGrew.
Great, man.
Immediately.
Yeah, because I only have...
Steve has like 4 million Twitter followers. So good job, everybody. We get it. You like Steve.
92,000. That's
amazing.
I worked that thing. My girlfriend's mad at me all the time. What are you doing? I'm working it. I'm following back. That's the big thing. If you don't, you have to follow back people. I always say it's social media. Even if you don't know the person, because a lot of people go, I don't follow because I don't know them. No, you follow back. That's the whole process of getting fans.
Sure. Yeah. It's interesting. Everybody has their own thing on that. I'm just trying to do it as much as I enjoy it, and most of it for me ends up being promotion because of how many shows we have. But it is what it is.
Yeah,
I like it to write jokes. I feel like on Twitter no one's listening, and on Facebook it's like 100 likes. For Twitter it's like one favorite.
Well,
thanks guys.
You kind of learn that Twitter is a place where you can be a little smarter and not have to worry about somebody having to have a stupid comeback because they didn't get the joke.
Yeah, or just carries on a Facebook comment thread that you just want to end immediately or have to like message them to just please stop.
Please stop. You didn't get the joke. You don't understand.
Yeah. Just please, be civil. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, man. Thanks for doing the podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, and let's do it again soon.
We will. See you, man.
All right,
everybody,
you.
Andy Jewett. Clap, 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 clap. Well, that was Andy Jewett, everybody. Andy Jewett. Andy. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. It was a lot of fun today. It's always nice to talk with friends. It's always nice to talk comedy and find out what's going on in the comedy world. So until next time, God bless America. Go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. I bid you adieu. Ha ha ha! What the hell kind of ending is that? That's disturbing.